Hello everyone, welcome to the International Business Podcast. If you work across time zones, borders and cultures, this is the show for you. I'm Leonardo, founder and host of the show, but let's make it simple and just call me Leo. I'm based in Shanghai and I'm accompanied by two co-hosts, Stefano, based in Paris, and Audrey from San Francisco. On these select episodes of the show, we'll extract our favorite moments from previous episodes of the International Business Podcast. You can find the links to the guests in the show notes. Enjoy. The Chinese economy is moving away from exports to domestic consumption. So rising incomes will create opportunities and are creating opportunities for foreign brands to sell products in China rather than just producing in China.
You know, China, it's quite remarkable. I've been in China. Actually, I arrived 24 years and 2 months ago. I arrived in China to study Mandarin at Nankai University in Tianjin. And it's hard to describe just how poor China was at the time. You know, you would see thousands of people on the street with little cardboard signs saying, "We'll work." This was right after Zhu Rongji launched the major state-owned enterprise reforms, where a lot of people became unemployed as the government rightly tried to force more efficiency in SOEs. Now, China has already crossed the $10,000 per person per capita income level. So it's already passed by that mid-income trap that a lot of American economists kept worrying that China was going to collapse economically and implode if it couldn't pass that. Now China is about, it's on the brink, actually, Leo, of becoming a high-income country. Now, what that means is China has become a great market for Western brands. So China is now the largest market in the world for Adidas globally. It's now become the largest market after the United States for Apple, for Starbucks. You know, there's more KFC fried chicken sold in China than in the United States. So China should be viewed for the world's largest companies as their major growth engine. Now, that said, there is going to be some rough patches going forward. You know, you see, aside from geopolitics, which we just talked about in the decoupling, you're also seeing the rise of domestic Chinese brands. And these Chinese brands are as good, if not better, than a lot of the foreign brands. You know, for instance, I'm wearing Anta pants right now because they were as comfortable and better quality than Adidas. You know, I just don't buy Adidas anymore. I'm not sure why anyone would when Chinese sports apparel brands like Li Ning and Anta have a very competitive product at a great price. And so I think gone are the days when Western brands from Italy or the United States can just come in and say, "We're Italian, buy our way of life, buy that lifestyle." It's just not going to happen anymore. And I think that a lot of the Western brands just are not prepared. They're not very sophisticated, and they're going to get their butts kicked in the coming years to Chinese brands.
You have over 15 years of experience with sales, recruitment, people development, processes, and entrepreneurship. Your main thrill is grow businesses, Christine. How about growth during this special year, during the year of the coronavirus?
Well, it's obviously a challenge. But as I said to one of my colleagues, because she was saying, "Oh, I'm so happy I don't have your job. There's so many problems." But I like to solve problems because that's where I can really add value. It's not that I wish for bad things to happen, but if there are problems to be solved, you can add so much more value and help people move forward and do things. And I think that during Corona, obviously it was a challenge to see how could we reorganize sales in the company that I was in, and where it was normal that you would go see customers and show them the product, and suddenly trying to figure out how can we do this in an online version and do it in a way where we still bring the same value to our customers, that we still connect with them. And I thought it was really fun and stimulating to do. And I'm so surprised to see how well it worked. And also I also had some new colleagues that I never got to meet in real life. I only saw them virtually, but we still managed to bond and we still managed to create growth and grow as a team. And I think that was just a very wonderful experience, and to see that it can be done, because normally I might have said that it's difficult to do that virtually and you need to meet in person. But since we're all in the same boat and we still all have to connect that way, then it has worked.
So for the salespeople out there, what will be one piece of advice you'd give them?
I think it would be the same piece of advice, Corona or not. It's all about creating relationship with people, helping them, building trust. Because when your customers, they know you, they like you, they feel that they can confide in you, they would want to buy all sorts of things from you, not only what you sell, but also other stuff, just because, okay, we can trust in you. So can you help us, or can you connect me with somebody who can help? So I think it's all about, yeah, being human, being genuinely interested in the people that you talk to, and more thinking about how can I help rather than when can I sell you something.
So simple, straightforward question here, Tom. Can you give us a definition of expat?
Sure. So the easiest definition is someone who just settles outside their own country. But it includes so many different types of people, especially nowadays, with travel being relatively inexpensive compared to the past. But, expats may live temporarily overseas. They may completely renounce their citizenship of one country in favor of another. My own experience was primarily with professional people who would be responsible for leaving for a period of 2 to 5 years. And of course, once they get on the road, a significant portion of them kind of want to stay, mainly because they've kind of thrived in the environment, learned a little bit about the culture. So, it depends on the profession, but typical expats that we deal with are people that are overseas for 2 to 5 years and kind of uproot their entire families.
Let's look a little bit at the past decade, Tom. Where did expats relocate more often? But at the same time, let's look at the future, at the near future, let's say 5-10 years from now. Where do you see, which countries do you think will attract more expats?
I think that this has been a huge seismic shift across the last 20 years. I think in the early 2000s, we're kind of considered the golden age for going to China. Everyone saw that China was going to be this gigantic market entry point for Asia, that people could go over and serve mass communities of customers and provide value for customers. I think the last 10 years have been really good for folks who want to work in the Middle East and India. Financial powerhouses in Singapore and Hong Kong and London, they're always going to be bringing folks in. And then I think 10 years ago in Kuwait and places like that, it became about the oil industry and also the tech industry. So a lot of expats moving to that area. However, the landscape is changing very significantly. And most expats will tell you and lament that the support that they receive on these expat assignments, both financial support as well as company support, is dwindling. It's getting smaller. The perks of being on an expat assignment have been reduced significantly as companies kind of chase efficiency. The craziest thing has probably been the last 12 months with COVID. Different countries have reacted very differently to COVID. I spent a lot of time in Japan and Korea, where they locked down pretty seriously, and they've had very, very few deaths. And so families are hindered in their daily lives when they're kind of stuck over there. And then there's the ones who haven't left home yet and had a prospective expat assignment and who are not able to go. So different countries are handling it differently. There's a very interesting article from Bloomberg that I saw that it posits that kind of the pandemic global recession with a little sprinkle of pent up nationalism is making it tough for skilled foreign workers to go abroad, because not only is it expensive and troublesome, but also local countries are now embracing a little bit more of a populist movement. And they're saying, let's make sure that our people get these jobs first. And so some of those jobs are being given to locals who may or may not have the right characteristics. And a lot of foreign workers are staying home. But I think in the future, we can expect to see a lot tougher visa criteria, probably fewer jobs, and concerted government pressure on companies to hire locally. But it won't stop the need for expertise and oversight in some of these countries.
You can find the podcast on all the major platforms. Make sure to subscribe. Do not miss the weekly episodes. And are you an international professional? Connect with us on LinkedIn to come on the show. For now, cheers.